It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, it was an exciting game, but the Heat swallow a tough loss in overtime to the Wizards.
And there's some controversy about the officiating at the end of that game. We'll get to that in our spotlight performances of the night. But for now, let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
The Heat led for all of 39 seconds in their loss to the Wizards. It was 90-88 at the start of the fourth quarter, and yet Miami managed to hang in the game for 53 minutes on the second night of a back-to-back. The Wizards, look, they're a good team despite them entering that game losing three straight games. You could have written this one off as a schedule loss. Miami, of course, coming off that win against the Suns and then having to get on the road and traveling to Washington. But you got to give them credit though, because the Heat did compete in that game in a game that they probably could have just given up pretty early. The Wizards getting out to a pretty substantial lead there in the first quarter. Miami battles back. They finally tie the game at the end of regulation, force overtime, and they competed all the way through. And depending on what you think of the officiating towards the end of that game, they may have done enough to win. But I want to go through the final few series of this first before we get to all the rest of that stuff. At the end of regulation, Dwayne Wade, vintage Dwayne Wade moment, drives to the basket, gets fouled with 22.8 seconds left. Bradley Beal was the guy who fouled him right under the rim, kind of inexplicably. There was no reason for him to do that. Wade hits the shot, makes his free throw, ties the game. Game goes to overtime. In overtime, the Wizards start to pull away. Markieff Morris scored four straight points in the middle of it. Washington takes a 113-109 lead. And then with 56 seconds left is when things got really interesting. Wade inbounds the ball to Kelly Olynyk, who sets a screen and gives it back to Wade. So Wade curls around that screen, drives into the paint, and then there's who else but Kelly Oubre, who stonewalls him right in the paint, forces a turnover, grabs a steal, goes down to the other end. The Wizards are pushing it in transition. Then Josh Richardson, he comes away with the takeaway, gets and then pushes it down back to the other floor, the other side of the floor, gets fouled by Martin Gortat right under the rim, missed the layup that looked like he probably should have made there, though Gortat probably has 100 pounds on Richardson pretty easily. Richardson splits the free throws. Game's 113-110. And then Miami immediately comes out with the full court press with about 30 seconds left. The Heat trap Satoransky at half court, and then looked like they may have forced a turnover there with Josh Richardson recovering the loose ball, but the refs called a foul on Goran Dragic. That sent Satoransky back to the line. He splits his free throws. Wizards now lead 114-110. On Miami's next possession, Dwayne Wade takes a corner three and is fouled by Oubre. He makes all three of his free throws, narrows the lead, 114-113. The Heat foul. Wizards are on the inbound. Josh Richardson deflects the first one. And by the way, Josh Richardson is amazing on inbounds plays, defending those inbounds plays. I mean, he's almost impenetrable. But the ball goes out of bounds off of Richardson. And then, so the Wizards get a second chance to do it. Markieff Morris, who's inbounding the ball, he gets it to Satoransky, but it looked like it should have been a five-second violation. The refs don't call it. Satoransky again splits at the line, 115-113. And then on the final play, Eric Spoelstra draws up a play to get Satoransky pinned down behind Dwayne Wade right in the middle of the lane. Wade turns around, pump fakes the crap out of Satoransky, who just jumps out of the picture. But Wade somehow misses the shot after everything else he had done in that game, somehow misses just the gimme shot.
You know, it seems like, again, unfortunate that Miami's relying on Dwayne Wade so much in clutch moments. It paid off in some regards. It didn't in others. There was that play where Oubre kind of blocks him off and forces a turnover. He stole the ball pretty cleanly from there. And I remember texting you right after that because I know about your love of all things Kelly Oubre related. And unfortunately, he came up with a pretty solid play there.
Wayne missed that look at the end, but Olynyk ended up getting the rebound and he missed it at the rim too. And I saw some people on Twitter saying this is why you have somebody like Whiteside or even Bam Adebayo who didn't get a lot of minutes, who didn't play in that game or very much in that game.
I don't know what was going on with Kelly Olynyk tonight. Like, he finished 1 of 7, and with only 3 points. He's not the most athletic guy, but he's still fairly close to 7 feet tall. I mean, his head's practically at the rim already, and his outstretched arms. I don't know what he was trying to do there. Look, the Wade thing, he had such a good look that I think he kind of just was a little too, like, he tossed that ball up trying to get it over Markieff Morris, who was going for the block, but Morris was sailing past him as he put that shot up. I think he was just surprised that he had so much open space after, as you said, fake the hell out of Satoransky. Like, that was expertly done. Like, I did not see that coming. He had such a wide open look, and Satoransky isn't exactly a staunch defender, but he's an NBA caliber player who had a really good game overall, and he was just completely out of
not a small guard by any means.
I mean, no, he's 6'7", isn't he? Yeah, he's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, as a guard, he's very large, very long wing.
Did you like the play though? Because there have been moments, and you sort of alluded to this before, where, you know, Miami, obviously they're going to Dwayne Wade a lot in these clutch situations, but in the past, Spoelstra just it did look like he was sort of just falling back on just give it to Dwayne Wade, let him hero ball this thing.
Yeah.
And he drew up a nice, I mean, that was a great play. I mean, to draw a pin down on Satoransky in the middle of the lane and an inbounds play, I don't think that we've seen this season yet in this sort of moment. Like, that was the time to sort of break out a brand new inbounds play, because we've seen a lot of inbounds and out of timeout plays repeated by Spoelstra this season, which is what coaches do. That's not anything but normal. But this was it was an interesting play call. I don't know if he drew it up on the spot or if that's something he had in his back pocket after Dwayne Wade was reacquired. But I thought it was a good play call, at least. And at least he wasn't just falling back on just giving the ball to Wade and letting him ISO the thing.
It looked like it took – I mean, I'm looking at the play-by-play on ESPN right now, and it says that they got the ball, or they inbound the ball with 10.2 seconds left, and Dwayne's shot came with about 4 some seconds left. So it only took a small amount of time off the clock. It was just enough to really kill it and tie the game and go into a second overtime where you never know what might happen. So I personally think it was an expertly designed play, worked really well. And like I said, I think the reason why Wade missed it was because he just had too much daylight. It was practically blinding. And so he hoisted this shot, kind of got away from him a little bit, went off the glass and then caromed off. But Olynyk's miss is inexcusable, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, he's a 7-footer for crying out loud, and he was just had to get a rebound. These are drills that, look, you want to say that he grew up as a guard in Canada, and maybe he's not used to playing a big man game, fine. But he's been doing these drills like any basketball player has for his whole life. I mean, his dad's a coach, coached him at the high school level. I'm pretty sure he's familiar with the putback drill, and he blew it. Like, he really did. I don't know if he was trying to rush it he had 4 seconds at that point, and I don't know why he rushed it the way he did. But look, I you know me, I'm always hesitant to blame officiating, but they botched it on a number of occasions. I mean, the 5-second violation, that was pretty egregious. That looked, again,
we got to save that for the Twitter part of the show. That's one of our questions, but did want to mention, though, that Miami points off of turnovers. That's been the theme since the All-Star break. That is also sort of what kept Miami in the game. 29 points off of 16 Washington turnovers there. And then you got to credit the Wizards. Look, I mean, Bradley Beal, we know he's been playing great since John Wall has been out. 30 points, 7 assists. He made 6 of his 7 threes. A lot of them were contested. Josh Richardson's defense, I don't have him for my spotlight player, but I almost did. Richardson with 16 points in the game had a nice game offensively in the second half, where he started to get going a little bit. But defensively against Beal, especially towards the end of the game, I thought he was really strong, but Beal was still able to make a bunch of shots. And that's the case when you're playing somebody like Bradley Beal. Mm-hmm. Quick Eastern Conference standings update. The Heat spent one day in seventh place before dropping back down to eighth. They're now a half game back behind the Milwaukee Bucks. And they're now two games behind the sixth-seeded 76ers. Philadelphia won in Charlotte tonight. We'll go to Twitter next and take some of the questions or comments that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA, which has revamped its format. In addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, David and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday. It'll be a digestible show, just 20 or 30 minutes long, delivering the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day.
We recorded our third show of the of Locked On NBA earlier today, and it was a lot of fun to cover the 29 other teams in addition to Miami, as we do so frequently. So just like you think of Locked On Heat as your daily briefing for all things Heat-related, Locked On NBA is your first stop to find out the most important headlines on all the other teams in the NBA, analysis from around the league, and the top games and stories. So just make sure that you subscribe on our favorite podcast, on your favorite podcasting app, and to please leave us a review on iTunes.
So, David, you mentioned the officiating at that end of the game, and that really is, I think, the story here, because I'm like you. I don't like to blame officiating or fall back on the officiating, but I'll throw it to Taylor at this point, who writes in, "The Heat got robbed!" 4 or 5 exclamation points. The officiating was really one-sided on several occasions, and we could talk about those occasions. And I sort of mentioned them in my little breakdown at the start of the show here, where, you know, you've got the 5-second violation, right? But even before the 5-second violation, which was particularly
egregious, I remember one.
Your words,
the Marcin Gortat flop.
When was that?
Oh, that was late in the fourth quarter when Justice Winslow drove to the hoop and he didn't even make contact with Gortat at all. And he was, first of all, he was sliding into position, barely brushed him, and Gortat fell to the ground like a Polish ton of bricks. And you know, the ref was very enthusiastic in calling that offensive foul. And again, I hate to blame the refs, but that just seemed a little bit too egregious.
Yeah. So between that, I don't know if you want to call that in the half court there when Satoransky kind of fumbled the ball away and they ended up calling a foul on Goran Dragic, and Eric Spoelstra almost got a technical. He went on the court and probably should have been teed up for what they were teeing up guys for in that game, but. Yeah. Luckily he wasn't, because he was able to draw up that play and give Miami a chance at the end of that game. But
looked like a clean steal to me.
It looked like a clean steal to me. It did. I mean, was there a little bit of contact? Yeah, but it seemed like after Satoransky fumbled the ball away.
You see, but you say there's a little bit of contact.
The Wizards did not look.
You say a little bit of contact, yeah. And Wizards fans will say, "Oh, no way! That's the definition of a foul." It's like, well, he was double teamed by Richardson and Dragic. Dragic kind of went in there. Maybe a little haphazardly. I didn't see too much contact, to be honest with you. And I think he poked away at the ball.
The contact didn't cause the turnover,
no, right?
Right.
Like, I think Satoransky was turning away from Dragic's overeager hands, and in doing so, fumbled the ball. And that's when they were able to pick it pretty cleanly and push the ball ahead to what would look like would have been an easy layup to tie the game. Instead, it was a foul call and push it in the other direction.
Yeah, and let's just – I didn't like that one. I didn't agree with that one. I didn't agree with the 5-second violation. I mean, Eric and Tony on the broadcast each counted down in that 5 seconds, and it was quite clearly at least 5.5 seconds, at the very minimum. I mean, that was ridiculous, and I cannot wait to see the last 2-minute report of this game, because it's going to say cost the Miami Heat the game. Like, I mean, that was ridiculous.
It was.
It was so.
I've never seen players after the game, after the play, turning to a ref and saying, "Why no 5-second violation?" Like, that's something I rarely have ever seen. Like, specifically saying this, he took too long to inbounds the ball. I mean, it's like the play was already broken down. He had already inbounded. They fouled him in order to kill the shot clock. But man, like, players were turning to the ref, and it was that – I don't know who it was, to be honest with you. I wish I remembered the ref's name. But
Josh – oh, the ref's name. Okay.
Yeah, he was turning to him and just said, you know – and Dwayne Wade, you know, obviously as the elder spokesperson, was like, well, why no 5 seconds? What's going on with that? And then that's when Fiorentino and Reed, you know, astutely pointed out that it looked like it was well over 5 seconds. They counted down – I think they counted down to 7 seconds when Markieff Morris finally inbounded the ball. Absolutely ridiculous. And you can kind of see when Morris kind of smiling afterwards, like he knows he got away with it. But what are you going to do? You know, and look, I know that there are several times throughout the course of the game where the officials do the best they can, and there's only so much that they can get right. There's always going to be errors in either side. But it just, in a game like this that meant so much more to Miami, I think, they really needed this win. Can you pull away from this one and say it was a moral victory that they tried their best, and you can still kind of take some positives out of this considering it's the second night of a back-to-back?
Yeah, I mean, that – I'm not about moral victories necessarily, but I do just try to like – I try to recognize, you know what I mean? I just try to recognize. Like, I'm going to recognize if the Heat screwed it up or if the Wizards deserve to win it, or – look, or if the officiating sucked. And in this situation, look, Miami got out to a bad start. I don't think that it cost them the game as much as I think people think it did. They got back into the game, and at that point, it's pretty much whatever it is. They played hard. The officiating kind of cost them the game at the end, I thought, like legitimately cost them that game. And the fact that they were able to compete in the fourth quarter and outscore Washington 25-19 in the fourth quarter on the second night of a back-to-back, and then come out and give a real effort in overtime. I thought they came out in overtime a little flat. So if you're gonna criticize what the Heat did, that is where you want to criticize. They came out in those first couple minutes pretty flat in the extra period. But you also got to give them respect for coming out on the second night of a back-to-back on the road against a tough opponent and only losing by 4 points, and probably should. And probably shouldn't have won the game, you know, given what happened towards the end.
Yeah, that 18-point deficit in the first quarter was brutal. I mean, to go down 25-9 in the first quarter, midway through the first, that's tough. You know, they just look very lost.
They look slow. They look like they got off the plane. You know, like, I actually don't have as much of a problem with that as I don't think it cost them the game. I really don't. I think that, look, teams are going to make runs, and Washington just made their run immediately. Like, teams make runs in the middle of a game. And Miami made their run and ended up, you know, making it a real game by the end of the first quarter. I don't think it was that impactful on the game. I could be wrong. It was definitely not as impactful as the refs.
It's hard to come back from it. Look, we've seen this system before, though. That's part of a larger theme for Miami, is that they've allowed, even when it's not on the second night of a back-to-back, they've allowed big deficits. They find a way, to their credit, to come back, but they shouldn't have to come back. I understand maybe there's a built-in excuse on a night like tonight when they did look a little tired, and for good reason. But at the same time, you know, to have to come back, rely on 36-year-old Dwayne Wade to pull your butts out of the fire, which he did. You know, he had some good plays there. And then those free throws, you know – He's as clutch as it gets, to be honest with you, except for that one, you know.
Those three free throws.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, that was.
Well, let's talk about Dwayne Wade, because that lends itself to our next Twitter question coming from Umar.
Yes.
Who writes in, a few bad plays by Wade down the stretch. He didn't need to take that three when the game was tied. And he's referring to with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left in overtime, the game was tied at 107. Dwayne Wade took a three-pointer, which is weird. And he's right. It was early in the shot clock. Didn't need to happen. But to your point, David, I mean, if not for Wade, Miami's probably not in that game. And that's sort of what I want to get at here is you kind of – and I almost tweeted this at the end of the game. The last, I don't know, half of the fourth quarter in overtime was sort of live and die by Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the feeling I got. And then Spoelstra sort of – I thought made up for it with that last play call, even though it was to Wade. It wasn't just like, Wade, go do whatever you need to go do. He drew up a play like we were talking about. But look, I mean, this is how it's been since Dwayne Wade's come back to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, it's good and bad in some sense. Look, I mean, I've talked about this on a number of occasions that it's a little disconcerting to rely on Wade as much as we have, but he has come up. On a number of occasions, and on others he hasn't. Like, I mean, I can't blame him for that that missed layup there towards the end of overtime. It is what it is. I think he was trying his best, and look, you know, he was mostly very efficient considering he played 20 something minutes, and he was scoring at such a, it's 28 minutes and he scored 22 points. I mean, 8 of 18 shooting. You know, this team has needed a gunner because this offense has been pretty bogged down for most of the season ever since Deion Waiters got hurt. So I think that it's needed somebody to kind of step up and be willing, as you've pointed out on a number of occasions, be willing to take those shots, especially down the stretch. So that's Wade's role, and he plays it pretty well on most occasions. So,
and those veteran, just like the veteran know-how and understanding of what to do at the end of the games, understanding of how to use a pump fake and get a clean look off. You know, you can debate whether or not he should be taking long twos and or three pointers at the end, but just understanding that that's how you have that's what it takes to win games. You shorten the shot clocks. You get more possessions in there when you're playing from behind like they were mainly the entire game outside of the 39 seconds where they led. And you've got to sort of do those things. And then I think back to that play where Miami was down three, Wade pump fakes and then drives to the lane, and this is at the end of regulation, and just gets that layup with, I think there was 22 seconds left or something like that.
Yeah.
And gets the layup, and he's fouled by Bradley Beal, again, inexplicably fouled by Beal. He didn't need to do that, but let's say he wasn't even fouled. And he ties the game at the free throw line. Wade was 6-6 from the line tonight. But let's say Beal doesn't foul him. He went for two despite being down by three, but with 22 seconds left, there's still enough time to play defense. There's still enough time to play the foul game if you have to, and just at least get another possession out of it and keep the game alive, basically. And that's the sort of thing that you want Dwayne Wade there for. He's been in so many situations like this. He understands what it takes to win, and that's not just coach speak. That's a real thing. We get to our spotlight performances next, but first, before we move on to that, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, how's it looking?
Well, we're still at 94 reviews, so please make sure that you go on there. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. And if you can, take a quick minute to leave us a nice review. Like Ras Mad Yard writes, "I love this show. When it's not on, I feel lost due to the fact that there are no other shows out there that have this type of knowledge and passion about the ultimate subject in my life other than my children, the Miami Heat. Keep up the good work." So we're in the second there. I'm not sure if Ras Mad Yard's spouse might be appreciative of this, but
well, what do we have to do to get number one over his children? His children can't be that great.
Not as good as us talking about Miami, that's for sure.
On a daily basis. All right, let's get to our spotlight performances here. David, who do you got?
I've got Tyler Johnson. He looked really good early on. We brought it up on a number of occasions that he seems energized following the All-Star break, certainly much more aggressive. He scored 21 points on 8 of 15 shooting. He was 2 of 6 from three-point range. A little strange, just 3 of 7 at the free throw line. That's not like him. A couple of those free throws might have helped Miami, not necessarily made the difference in tonight's game, but it certainly would have helped. 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block in 38 minutes. So I think he played more than any other player. Let me check that. Yes, he did. Oh, actually, no. Him and Justice Winslow both played 38 minutes, so that was pretty impressive for both of them. In the first half, he was 5 of 10 and had 12 points, and I think he was really the difference maker when Miami did get into that early deficit. They were able to kind of build on his offensive scoring there, his explosion, and just, you know, they kind of continue to realize, look, you know what, they're not going to give up. He sets the tone with his intensity and aggressiveness, and I think that's great for the other players to feed off of. He was coming off the bench today, and I think it really paid off for him. And then in the third quarter, he wound up starting in place of Luke Babbitt, who was mostly ineffectual. So,
yeah, I mean, look, Tyler Johnson's coming back from that injury, right? And Spoelstra's been a little slow to bring him back to work him back into his full allotment of minutes and his full role, because he was starting at the two spot before he got hurt. But he started him in the second half, to your point there, and that might be a sign that Tyler Johnson could be starting going forward. I don't know. I think Spoelstra likes Richardson at the two spot there. But I do wonder, I haven't been that impressed with Luke Babbitt all that much. I mean, we talked about that game against Phoenix where his value was in making 4 of 7 three-pointers in the first quarter. But if he didn't do that, he was basically a negative because of what he was doing defensively.
And you pointed
tonight,
out
he was a negative. I mean, he was literally a negative plus minus. What
you
was
said
that?
You said that during our Phoenix Suns recap that you thought it might be best to just kind of use him that way. If he's going good and he's got the hot hand, ride it out, see how long before he starts missing shots, and then take him out. And a night like tonight, when he wasn't even hot at any point, just go ahead and take him out. I mean, I still like the idea of starting Luke Babbitt, so I think it's a good idea. But just because he can space the floor and you can always get a little bit out of him, you know, you don't want to just waste him on the bench. To be honest with you, I think he still provides some value when he's hitting those shots. But on a night when he's not, probably better to go with Tyler Johnson. So it's an interesting wrinkle there. Do you think he would have been a better option in crunch time? I wanted to ask you that because given how well he had played, look, he was only 2 of 6 from three-point range. Chances are he probably would have wound up with a 3-point attempt there. He looked like he was out there in those clutch minutes, but the play wasn't designed for him. And he did give up the ball whenever he had it. Do you think it would have been better? It would have showed a lot of confidence from Spoelstra to say, Tyler, you've been our hot hand tonight. Go out there and win us this game. Maybe that's something.
He had already.
Go ahead.
He ended up logging 38 minutes in the game, and you're right. Like towards the end, he did look. He wasn't as effective as he was toward in the middle of that game, and you know, it's hard for me to say that they should have, because I thought, you know, Dwayne Wade had such a good look at the end there that it's hard to doubt that. You know, it's hard to say, look, instead of doing that and having a good as good a chance as you could to win that game, that they should have went to Tyler Johnson. I thought that, look, sometimes it's just the ball doesn't roll the right way on the rim, and sometimes the officiating sucks. Yeah. My spotlight guy was Justice Winslow. He had 15 points on 5-11 shooting, 6 rebounds, also had an assist and a steal. And I want to talk about Justice Winslow specifically because in that end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter zone, and that has been typically the death zone for Miami's offense. That has been the point where Miami's offense goes straight into the mud, and it takes them another 3 or 4 minutes to wheel themselves out of it. Justice Winslow kept the offense, I thought, alive during that period. He scored 7 points between the last 20 seconds of the third quarter and the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, and that narrowed Washington's lead to 88-87. Dwayne Wade came back, hit a few free throws, and that was Miami's first lead of the game and only lead of the game, again, for those 39 seconds of the game that they actually led. Winslow, it continues to play well, and that's really the spotlight here, is that he is bringing the ball up a whole lot, and credit Eric Spoelstra, finally letting him touch the ball to bring it up, facilitate the offense, sort of get them engaged. He's been super aggressive getting to the rim. He's been great finishing at the rim. Again, he's got his legs back, and that has not been talked about enough. There was a play where he basically leapt over Markieff Morris. He ended up missing the layup, but it just showed, like, this dude is getting up, jumping up high again. He's got his legs back. The jump shots look good. Even though, what was he tonight? He was only 1 of 4 on 3-pointers. But he's taken them, and that's the important part. So I'm okay with Winslow scoring 15 points on 11 shots, as long as he's taking the 11 shots. And every player in the NBA is going to have on and off nights shooting the ball. Keep playing like this, Justice Winslow. I love the aggressive Justice Winslow.
Yeah, look, he's scored in double digits in 4 of the past 5 games, 17, 13, and 12. And then he had a 2-point game in the win against Philadelphia. We only played 19 minutes, but still, he's just been really, really, really good. And I wonder, you know, if it's a combination of his health returning to him, which I think that's an excellent point on your end. But I wonder if Dwayne Wade's return has also helped him kind of understand and maybe build a little confidence. Look, we talked about with Tyler Johnson, it was one of those things that kind of clicked for him. The way he looks at Wade as a mentor, and it certainly helped. He looks much more aggressive. I wonder for a guy like Justice, you know, we were there in summer league watching Justice react to the Dwayne Wade news and live, you know, live action there. It clearly hurt him and disrupted everything that we thought, you know, he was going to look to Wade as a mentor in his second year there, and it didn't work out that way. So maybe this is something that's a little bit encouraging for him to be a lot more aggressive and become a total player.
I love the way that they're using him. He's setting screens, he's handling the ball, he's shooting.
Yeah, it looks good.
Freedom. Man. He looks great. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions or comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.